and I'm not when I deserve it more. I worked harder. I got better grades, higher SAT scores.
Fuck them.
Peter.
Sorry. Screw them.
He exhales.
This is insane.
Automatically, I say, well, it's not insane. UVA is a really competitive school. I'm not mad at them. I just wish I was going there. He nods.
Yeah, me too.
Suddenly, we hear the toilet flush from the hallway, and we both freeze. You better go, I whisper. Peter gives me one more hug before climbing back out my window. I stand there and watch him run down the street to where he parked his car. After he drives away, I check my phone, and there are 2 missed calls from Margot, and then a text from her that says, I'm so sorry. And that's when I start to cry again, because that's when it finally feels real. Chapter 9. When I wake up in the morning, it's the first thing I think of. How I'm not going to UVA. How I don't even know where I'm going. My whole life, I've never had to worry about that. I've always known where my place is. Where I belong. Home. As I lie there in bed, I start a mental tally of all the things I'm going to miss out on. Not going to college just around the corner from home. The moments. Kitty's first period. My dad's an OB, so it's not like he doesn't have it covered, but I've been waiting for this moment to give Kitty a speech about womanhood that she'll hate. It might not happen for another year or two, but I got mine when I was 12, and Margot got hers when she was 11, so who knows? When I got my first period, Margot explained all about tampons and what kind to use for what days. And to sleep on your belly when your cramps are particularly bad. She made me feel like I was joining some secret club, a woman's club. Because of my big sister, the grief I felt about growing up was less acute. Kitty likely won't have either of her big sisters here, but she does have Ms. Rothschild, and she's only just across the street. She's grown so attached to Ms. Rothschild that she'll probably prefer a period talk from her anyway, truth be told. Even if in the future Daddy and Ms. Rothschild were to break up, I know Ms. Rothschild would never turn her back on Kitty. They're cemented. I'll miss Kitty's birthday, too. I've never not been at home for her birthday. I'll have to remind Daddy to carry on our birthday sign tradition. For the first time ever, all of the song girls will be living truly apart. We three probably won't ever live in the same house together again. We'll come home for holidays and school breaks, but it won't be the same. It won't be what it was. But I suppose it hasn't been, not since Margot left for college. The thing is, you get used to it. Before you even realize it's happening, you get used to things being different. And it will be that way for Kitty, too. At breakfast, I keep stealing glances at her, memorizing every little thing. Her gangly legs, her knobby knees, the way she watches TV with a half smile on her face. She'll only be as young as this for a little while longer. Before I leave, I should do more special things with her, just the two of us. At the commercial break, she eyes me. Why are you staring at me? No reason. I'm just going to miss you is all. Kitty slurps the rest of her cereal milk. Can I have your room?
What? No.
Yeah, but you won't be living here. Why should your room just sit there and go to waste? Why do you want my room and not Margot's? Hers is bigger. Practically, she says. Yours is closer to the bathroom, and it's got better light.
I dread change.
And Kitty steps right into it. She leans in extra hard. It's her way of coping. You'll miss me when I'm gone, I know it, so quit pretending you won't, I say.
I've always wondered what it would be like to be an only child, she says in a sing-song voice.
When I frown, she hurries to say, only kidding. I know Kitty's just being Kitty. But I can't help but feel a tiny stab of hurt. Why would anyone want to be an only child? What's so great about having no one to warm your feet up against on a cold winter night? You'll miss me, I say, more to myself than to her. She doesn't hear me anyway. Her show is back on. When I get to school, I go straight to Mrs. Duval's office to tell her the news. As soon as Mrs. Duval sees the look on my face, she says, "Come sit down." And she gets up from behind her desk and closes the door behind me. She sits in the chair next to mine. "Tell me." I take a deep breath. "I didn't get into UVA." Now that I've said it a few times, you'd think it would be easier to get the words out, but it's not. It's worse. She heaves a sigh. "I'm surprised. I'm very, very surprised. Your application was strong, Lara Jean. You're a wonderful student. I did hear that they got a few thousand more applicants this year than in years past. Still, I would have thought you'd be waitlisted at the very least." All I can do is give her a small shrug in response, because I don't trust my voice right now. She leans forward and hugs me. "I heard from a source in the admissions department that William and Mary will be sending out their decisions today. So buck up for that. And there's still UNC and U of R. Where else did you apply? Tech?" I shake my head. "JMU. All great schools. You'll be fine, Lara Jean. I'm not the least bit worried about you." I don't say what I'm thinking, which is that we both thought I'd get into UVA, too. Instead, I just offer a weak smile. When I walk out, I see Chris at the lockers. I tell her the news about UVA, and she says, "You should come with me and work on a farm in Costa Rica." Stunned, I lean back against the wall and say, "Wait, what? I told you about this." "No, I don't think you did." I've known Chris wasn't going away to college, that she was going to community college first and then see. She doesn't have the grades or much inclination, really. But she never said anything about Costa Rica. "I'm going to take a year off and go work on farms. You work for like 5 hours and they give you room and board. It's amazing." "But what do you know about farming?" "Nothing. It doesn't matter. You just have to be willing to work. They'll teach you. I could also work at a surfing school in New Zealand or learn how to make wine in Italy. Basically, I could go anywhere. Doesn't that sound amazing?" "It does." I try to smile, but my face feels tight. "Is your mom okay with it?" Chris picks at her thumbnail. "Whatever. I'm 18. She doesn't have a choice." I give her a dubious look. Chris's mom is tough. I have a hard time picturing her being okay with this plan. "I told her I'd do this for a year and then come back and go to PVCC and then transfer to a 4-year college," she admits. "But who knows what will happen? A year is a long time. Maybe I'll marry a DJ or join a band or start my own bikini line." That all sounds so glamorous. I want to feel excited for her, but I can't seem to muster up the feeling. It's good that Chris has her own thing to look forward to, something that no one else in our class is doing. But it feels like everything all around me is shifting in ways I didn't expect, when all I want is for things to stand still. "Will you write me?" I ask. "I'll Snapchat everything." "I'm not on Snapchat, and besides, that's not the same thing." I nudge her with my foot. "Send me a postcard from every new place you go, please." "Who knows if I'll even have access to a post office? I don't know how post offices work in Costa Rica."
"Well, you can try."
"I'll try," she agrees. I haven't seen as much of Chris this year. She got a job hostessing at Applebee's, and she's become very close with her work friends. They're all older. Some of them have kids, and they pay their own bills. I'm pretty sure Chris hasn't told any of them she still lives at home and pays exactly no bills. When I visited her there last month, one of the servers said something about hoping to make enough that night for rent, and she looked at Chris and said, "You know how it is." and Chris nodded like she did. When I gave her a questioning look, she pretended not to see. The warning bell rings, and we start walking to our first period classes.
Kavinsky must be freaking out that you didn't get into UVA, Chris says, checking her reflection in a glass door as we walk past.
So I guess you guys will do long distance? Yeah, my chest gets tight. I guess.
You should definitely get people in place to keep an eye on the situation, she says. You know, like spies? I think I heard Jillian McDougal got in. She'd spy for you.
I give her a look. Chris, I trust Peter.
I know. I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about random girls on his floor, dropping by his room. You should give him a picture of you to keep him company, if you know what I mean.
She frowns at me.
Do you know what I mean?
Like a sexy picture? No way. I start backing away from her. Look, I gotta go to class. The last thing I want to do is think about Peter and random girls. I'm still trying to get used to the idea that we won't be together at UVA this fall.
Chris rolls her eyes. Calm down. I'm not talking about a nudie. I would never suggest that for you of all people. What I'm talking about is a pinup girl shot, but not like cheesy. Sexy. Something Kavinsky can hang up in his dorm room.
Why would I want him to hang up a sexy picture of me in his dorm room for all the world to see?
Chris reaches out and flicks me on the forehead.
Ow!
I shove her away from me and rub the spot where she flicked me.
That hurt.
You deserved it for asking such a dumb question.
She sighs. I'm talking about preventative measures. A picture of you on his wall is a way for you to mark your territory. Kavinsky's hot, and he's an athlete. Do you think other girls will respect the fact that he's in a long-distance relationship?
She lowers her voice and adds, with a Virgin Mary girlfriend.
I gasp and then look around to see if anyone heard.
Chris!
I hiss. Can you please not?
I'm just trying to help you. You have to protect what's yours, Lara Jean. If I met some hot guy in Costa Rica with a long-distance GF who he wasn't even sleeping with, I don't think I'd take it very seriously.
She gives me a shrug and a sorry-not-sorry look.
You should definitely frame the picture, too, so people know you're not someone to mess with. A frame says permanence. A picture taped on a wall says here today, gone tomorrow.
I chew on my bottom lip thoughtfully. So maybe a picture of me baking in an apron?
With nothing underneath?
Chris cackles, and I flick her forehead lightning quick.
Ow!
Get serious, then. The bell rings again, and we go our separate ways. I can't see myself giving Peter a sexy picture of me, but it does give me an idea. I could give him a scrapbook instead. All of our greatest hits. That way, when he's missing me at UVA, he can look at it and keep it on his desk for any random girl who might happen by. Of course, I won't mention this idea to Chris. She'd just laugh and call me Grandma Lara Jean. But I know Peter will love it. Chapter 10. I'm on pins and needles all day waiting to hear the news from William and Mary. My entire focus is on my phone, waiting for it to buzz, waiting for that email. In AP English class, Mr. O'Brien has to ask me 3 times about the slave narrative tradition in Beloved. When it does buzz, it's just Margot asking me if I've heard anything yet. And then it buzzes again, and it's Peter asking me if I've heard anything yet. But nothing from William and Mary. Then, when I'm in the girls' room in between classes, it finally does buzz, and I scramble to zip up my jeans so I can check my phone. It's an email from University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, telling me my application has been updated. I stand there in the bathroom stall, and even though I truly don't expect to get in, my heart is pounding like crazy as I click on the link and wait. Waitlisted. I should be happy about it, because UNC is so competitive, and the wait list is better than nothing, and I would be happy if I had already gotten into UVA. Instead, it's like another punch in the stomach. What if I don't get in anywhere? What will I do then? I can see my Aunt Carrie and Uncle Victor now. Poor Lara Jean. She didn't get into UVA or UNC. She's so different from her sister. Margot's such a go-getter. When I get to the lunch table, Peter is waiting for me with an eager look on his face. Did you hear anything? I sit down in the seat next to him. I got waitlisted at UNC. Oh, shit. Well, it's impossible to get in there out of state unless you're a basketball player. Honestly, even getting on the waitlist is impressive. I guess so, I say. Screw them, he says. Who wants to go there anyway? A lot of people. I unwrap my sandwich, but I can't bear to take a bite because my stomach's tied up in knots. Peter gives a begrudging shrug. I know he's just trying to make me feel better, but UNC is a great school, and he knows it, and I know it, and there's no use pretending it's not. All through lunch, I'm listlessly sipping on my cherry Coke and listening to the guys go on about the game they've got coming up in a few days. Peter looks over at me at one point and squeezes my thigh in a reassuring way, but I can't even muster up a smile in return. When the guys get up to go to the weight room, it's just Peter and me left at the table, and he asks me worriedly, "Aren't you going to eat something?" "I'm not hungry," I say. Then he sighs and says, "It should be you going to UVA and not me." And just like that, poof, the traitorous little thought I had last night about me deserving it more than him disappears like perfume mist into the air. I know how hard Peter worked at lacrosse. He earned his spot. He shouldn't be thinking those kinds of thoughts. It's not right. Don't ever say that. You earned it. You deserve to go to UVA. His head down, he says,
"So do you, though."
Then his head snaps up, his eyes alight. "Do you remember Tony Lewis?" I shake my head. "He was a senior when we were freshmen. He went to PVCC for 2 years, and then he transferred to UVA his junior year. I bet you could do that, too. But you'd be able to do it even sooner since you're going to a regular 4-year college. Getting in as a transfer is a million times easier." I guess that's true. Transferring hadn't occurred to me. I'm still getting used to the idea that I won't be going to UVA.
"Right? Okay. So this fall, you'll go to William & Mary or U of R or wherever you get in, and we'll visit each other all the time, and you'll apply to transfer for next year, and then you'll be with me at UVA, where you belong."
Hope flares inside of me. Do you really think it'll be that easy for me to get in?
"Yeah! You should have gotten in the first place! Trust me, Cubby."
Slowly, I nod. "Yeah. Okay. Okay." Peter breathes a sigh of relief.
"Good. So we have a plan."
I steal a French fry off his plate. I can already feel my appetite coming back to me. I'm stealing another fry when my phone vibrates. I snatch it up and check. It's an email from the Office of Admissions at William & Mary. Peter looks over my shoulder and back at me, his eyes wide. His leg bounces up and down against mine as we wait for the page to load. "It is with great pleasure that I offer you admission to the College of William & Mary." Relief floods over me. Thank God. Peter jumps out of his seat and picks me up and swings me around. "Lara Jean just got into William & Mary," he shouts to the table, and anyone who is listening. Everyone at our table cheers.
"See?" Peter crows, hugging me. "I told you everything would work out."
I hug him back tightly. More than anything else, I feel relieved. Relieved to be in. Relieved to have a plan.
"We'll make it work until you're here,"
he says in a soft voice, burrowing his face in my neck.
"It's 2 hours away. That's nothing. I bet your dad would let you take the car. It's not like Kitty needs it yet. And I'll do the trip with you a few times to get you comfortable with it." It's gonna be all good, Covey.
I'm nodding. When I sit back down, I send a group text to Margot, Kitty, Ms. Rothschild, and my dad. I got into WNM. I throw in those exclamation marks for good measure to show how excited I am, to make sure they know they shouldn't feel sorry for me anymore, that everything is great now. My dad sends back a string of emojis. Ms. Rothschild writes, "You go, girl." Margot writes, "Yay! We will celebrate IRL next week." After lunch, I stop by Mrs. Duval's office to tell her the good news, and she is thrilled.
"I know it's your second choice, but in some ways it might be an even better fit than UVA was. It's smaller. I think a girl like you could really shine there, Lara Jean."
I smile at her, receive her hug, but inside I'm thinking, I guess she didn't think a girl like me could really shine at UVA. By the end of the week, I get into James Madison and University of Richmond, too, which I'm happy about, but I'm still set on William and Mary. I've been to Williamsburg plenty of times with my family, and I can picture myself there. It's a small campus, a pretty one, and it really isn't far from home. It's less than 2 hours away. So I'll go, I'll study hard, and then after a year, I'll transfer to UVA, and everything will be exactly the way we planned. Chapter 11. I'm the one who goes to the airport to pick up Margot and Ravi, while Daddy puts finishing touches on dinner and Kitty does her homework. I put the address into the GPS just in case, and I make it there without incident, thank God. Our airport is small, so I just circle around while I wait for the two of them to come out. When I pull up to the curb, Margot and Ravi are waiting, sitting on their suitcases. I park and then jump out and run over to Margot and throw my arms around her. Her hair is freshly bobbed around her chin. She's wearing a sweatshirt and leggings, and as I squeeze her tight, I think, oh, how I've missed my sister. I let go, and then I take a good look at Ravi, who is taller than I realized. He is tall and skinny, with dark skin and dark hair and dark eyes and long lashes. He looks so unlike Josh, but so like a boy that Margot would date. He has one dimple on his right cheek. "It's nice to meet you in real life, Lara Jean," he says. And right away, I'm bowled over by his accent. My name sounds so much fancier, all dressed up in an English accent. I'm feeling nervous, and then I see that his t-shirt says Dumbledore's Army, and I relax. He's a Potter person like us. "It's nice to meet you, too. So what house are you?" He grabs both Margot's and his suitcases and loads them into the trunk. "Let's see if you can guess. Your sister got it wrong." "Only because you were trying to impress me for the first month I knew you," she protests. Ravi laughs and climbs into the back seat. I think it's a good sign of his character that he doesn't automatically go for shotgun. Margot looks at me. "Do you want me to drive?" I'm tempted to say yes, because I always like it better when Margot drives, but I shake my head, jingle my keys high. "I've got it." She raises her eyebrows like she's impressed. "Good for you." She goes to the passenger side, and I get in the front seat. I look at Ravi in the rearview mirror. "Ravi, by the time you leave our house, I will have figured out your house." When we get home, Daddy and Kitty and Ms. Rothschild are waiting for us in the living room. Margot looks startled to see her there sitting on the couch with Daddy, her bare feet in his lap. I've grown so used to it, to her being around, that it feels to me like Ms. Rothschild is part of the family now. It hadn't occurred to me how jarring it would be for Margot. But the truth is, Ms. Rothschild and Margot haven't spent a lot of time together because she's been away at school. She wasn't around when Ms. Rothschild and Daddy first started dating, and she's only been home once since, for Christmas. As soon as Ms. Rothschild sees Margot, she jumps up to give her a big hug and compliments her on her hair. She hugs Ravi, too. God, you're a tall drink of water, she quips, and he laughs. But Margot just has a stiff smile on her face. Until she sees Kitty, who she wraps up in a bear hug and then seconds later squeals, Oh my God, Kitty, are you wearing a bra now? Kitty gasps and glares at her, her cheeks a dull, angry red. Abashed, Margot mouths, Sorry. Robbie hurries to step forward and shake Daddy's hand.
Hello, Dr. Covey. I'm Robbie. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, we're glad to have you, Robbie, Daddy says. Then Robbie smiles at Kitty and lifts his hand in greeting and says, a tad awkwardly, Hi, Kitty. Kitty nods at him without making eye contact.
Hello.
Margot is still staring at Kitty in disbelief. I've been here all along, so it's harder for me to see how much Kitty has grown in the past year. But it's true, she has. Not so much in the chest department. The bra is merely ornamental at this point, but in other ways.
Robbie, can I get you something to drink? Ms. Rothschild chirps. We have juice, Fresca, Diet Coke, water.
What's a Fresca?
Robbie asks, his brow furrowed. Her eyes light up.
It's a delicious grapefruity soda. Zero calories. You have to try it.
Margot watches as Ms. Rothschild goes to the kitchen and opens up the cabinet where we keep our cups. Filling a glass with ice, she calls out,
Margot, what about you? Can I get you something?
I'm fine, Margot answers in a pleasant enough tone, but I can tell she doesn't appreciate being offered a drink in her own home by someone who doesn't live there.
When Ms. Rothschild returns with Robbie's Fresca, she presents it to him with a flourish. He thanks her and takes a sip.
Very refreshing, Robbie says, and she beams.
Daddy claps his hands together.
Should we take the bags upstairs? Give you guys a chance to freshen up before dinner? We've got the guest room all set up.
He gives me a fond look before saying,
Lara Jean put in a new pair of slippers and a robe for you, Robbie.
Before Robbie can reply, Margot says, Oh, that's so nice, but actually, I think Robbie's just going to stay with me in my room. It's as if Margot has dropped a stink bomb in the middle of our living room. Kitty and I are looking at each other with huge OMG eyes. Daddy just looks stunned and at a complete loss for words. When I made up the guest room for Robbie, folded a set of towels for him on the side of the bed, and put out the robe and slippers, it never occurred to me that he'd be staying in Margot's room. Clearly, the thought never occurred to Daddy either. Daddy's face is growing redder by the second.
I don't know if...
Margot purses her lips nervously as she waits for Daddy to finish his sentence. We're all waiting, but he can't seem to figure out what to say next. His eyes dart over to Ms. Rothschild for help, and she puts her hand on the small of his back in support. Poor Robbie looks supremely uncomfortable. My first thought was that he was a Ravenclaw like Margot. Now I'm thinking he's a Hufflepuff like me. In a soft voice, he says,
I truly don't mind staying in the guest room. I'd hate to make things awkward.
Daddy starts to answer him, but Margot gets there first.
No, it's totally fine,
she assures Robbie. Let's go get the rest of our stuff out of the car. The second they leave, Kitty and I turn to each other. At the same time, we say, Oh, my God! Kitty ponders. Why do they need to stay in the same room together? Do they have to have sex that bad?
Enough, Kitty,
Daddy says, his tone sharper than I've heard him use with her. He turns and leaves, and I hear the sound of his office door closing. His office is where he goes when he is really mad. Ms. Rothschild gives her a stern look and follows after him. Kitty and I look at each other again.
Yikes,
I say.
He didn't have to snap, Kitty says sullenly. I'm not the one whose boyfriend is staying in my bed.
He didn't mean it. I tuck her against me, wrapping my arms around her bony shoulders.
Gogo has a lot of nerve, huh?
She's very impressive, my sister. I just feel sorry for Daddy.
This isn't a fight he's used to having, or any kind of fight at all, really. Of course, I text Peter right away and tell all. He sends back a lot of wide-eyed emojis and, "Do you think your dad would let us stay in the same room?" which I ignore. When Ravi goes upstairs to wash up and change, Ms. Rothschild says she has dinner out with the girls, so she'd better get going. I can tell Margot is relieved. After Ms. Rothschild leaves, Kitty takes Jamie Fox Pickle for a walk, and Margot and I head to the kitchen to fix the salad to go with the chicken Daddy's roasting. I'm eager to have a moment alone with her so we can talk about the whole sleeping arrangements situation, but I don't get a chance to ask because as soon as we step into the kitchen, Margot hisses at me, "Why didn't you tell me Daddy and Ms. Rothschild are so serious?" "I told you she's over here for dinner almost every night," I whisper back. I start rinsing a basket of cherry tomatoes so the sound of water running will give us cover. "She was walking around like she lives here. And since when do we have Fresca? We've never been a Fresca-drinking family." I start slicing the tomatoes in half. "She loves it, so I always make sure to buy a case when I go to the store. It's actually very refreshing. Ravi seemed to like it." "That's not the point. What's your problem with Miss Rothschild all of a sudden? You guys got along great when you were home for Christmas." I break off as Daddy walks into the kitchen.
"Margot, can I talk to you for a minute?"
Margot pretends to be busy counting out silverware.
"Sure. What's up, Daddy?"
Daddy glances at me, and I look back down at the tomatoes. I'm staying for moral support.
"I would prefer if Ravi stayed in the guest room."
Margot bites her lip.
"Why?"
There's an awkward silence before Daddy says,
"I'm just not comfortable."
"But, Daddy, we're in college. You do realize we've shared a bed before, right?"
"Riley," he says,
"I had my suspicions, but thank you for that confirmation."
"I'm almost 20 years old. I've been living away from home, thousands of miles away, for nearly 2 years.
Margot glances over at me, and I shrink down. I should have left when I had the chance.
"Lara Jean and I aren't little kids anymore."
"Hey, don't bring me into this," I say, as jokingly as I can. Daddy sighs.
"Margot, if you're set on this, I'm not going to stop you, but I would just remind you that this is still my house."
"I thought it was our house."
She knows she's won this battle, so she keeps her voice light as meringue.
"Well, you freeloaders don't pay the mortgage on it, I do, so that should make it my house slightly more."
With that final dad joke, he puts on oven mitts and takes the sizzling chicken out of the oven. When we sit down to eat, Daddy stands at the head of the table and carves the chicken with the fancy new electric carving knife Ms. Rothschild got him for his birthday.
"Ravi, can I offer you dark meat or white?"
Ravi clears his throat.
"I'm so sorry, but I actually don't eat meat."
Daddy gives Margot a horrified look.
"Margot, you didn't tell me Ravi was a vegetarian."
"Sorry," she says, grimacing. "I totally forgot. But Ravi loves salad."
"I truly do,"
he assures Daddy. "I'll take Ravi's portion," I offer. "I'll take two thighs." Daddy saws off two thighs for me.
"Ravi, tomorrow morning I'm making you a mean breakfast enchilada. No meat."
Smiling, Margot says,
"We're going to D.C. early tomorrow morning. Maybe the day he leaves?"
"Done," Daddy says.
Kitty is unnaturally subdued. I'm not sure if it's nervousness from having a boy she doesn't know sit at her dining room table, or if it's just because she's getting older, and she's less a kid in the way she interacts with new people. Though I suppose a 21-year-old boy is really more of a young man. Ravi has such nice manners, probably because he's English. And isn't it a fact that English people have better manners than Americans? He says sorry a lot.
Sorry, can I just... Sorry?
His accent is charming. I keep saying pardon so he'll speak again. For my part, I try to lighten the mood with questions about England. I ask him why English people call private school public school, if his public school was anything like Hogwarts, if he's ever met the royal family. His answers are, because they are open to the paying public, they had head boys and head girls and prefects, but no Quidditch, and he once saw Prince William at Wimbledon, but only the back of his head. After dinner, the plan is for Ravi, Margot, Peter, and me to go to the movies. Margot invites Kitty to come along, but she demurs, citing her homework as the reason. I think she's just nervous around Ravi. I get ready in my room, dab a little perfume, a little lip balm, put on a sweatshirt over my cami and jeans because the theater gets cold. I'm ready fast, but Margot's door is closed, and I can hear them talking quietly yet intensely. It's a strange thing to see her door closed. I feel like a little spy standing outside the door, but it's awkward because who knows if Ravi has a shirt on or what? It's so adult, that door closed, those hushed voices. Through the door, I clear my throat and say, "Are you guys ready? I told Peter we'd meet him at 8. Margot opens the door.
"Ready,"
she says, and she doesn't look happy. Ravi steps out behind her, carrying his suitcase.
"I'm just going to drop this off in the guest room, and then I'm all set,"
he says. As soon as he's gone, I whisper to Margot, "Did something happen?"
Ravi didn't want to make a bad impression on Daddy by us staying in the same room. I told him it was fine, but he doesn't feel comfortable.
That's very considerate of him. I wouldn't say so to Margot, but it was totally the right move. Ravi just keeps rising in my estimation. Reluctantly, she says,
"He's a very considerate guy.
Really handsome, too." A smile spreads across her face.
"And there's that."
Peter's already at the movie theater when we arrive. I'm sure because of Margot. He has no problem being late for me, but he would never dare be late for my big sister. Ravi buys all 4 of our tickets, which Peter is really impressed by.
"Such a classy move,"
he whispers to me as we sit down. Peter deftly maneuvers it so we're sitting me, Peter, Ravi, Margot, so he can keep talking to him about soccer, or football, as Ravi says. Margot gives me an amused look over their heads, and I can tell all the unpleasantness from before is forgotten. After the movie, Peter suggests we go for frozen custards.
"Have you ever had frozen custard before?"
he asks Ravi.
"Never,"
Ravi says.
"It's the best, Rav,"
he says.
"They make it homemade."
"Brilliant," Ravi says. When the boys are in line, Margot says to me,
"I think Peter's in love with my boyfriend."
And we both giggle. We're still laughing when they get back to our table. Peter hands me my pralines and cream.
"What's so funny?"
I just shake my head and dip my spoon into the custard. Margot says,
"Wait, we have to cheers my sister getting into William and Mary."
My smile feels frozen as everyone clinks their custard cups against mine. Ravi says,
"Well done, Lara Jean. Didn't John Stewart go there?"
Surprised, I say, "Why, yes, he did. That's a pretty random fact to know."
"Ravi's specialty is random facts," Margot says, licking her spoon.
"Don't get him started on the mating habits of the bonobos."
2 words,
Ravi says. Then he looks from Peter to me and whispers,
"Penis fencing."
Margot's so lit up around Ravi. I once thought she and Josh were meant for each other, but now I'm not so sure. When they talk about politics, they're both equally passionate, and they go back and forth, challenging each other, but also conceding points. They're like 2 flints sparking. If they were on a TV show, I could see them as rival residents at a hospital who first grudgingly respect each other and then fall madly in love.
Or two political aides at the White House. Or two journalists. Ravi is studying bioengineering, which is not a lot to do with Margot's anthropology, but they sure make a great team. The next day, Margot takes Ravi to Washington, D.C., and they visit a few of the museums on the Mall and the Lincoln Memorial and the White House. They invited Kitty and me to go along, but I said no on behalf of both of us, because I was pretty sure they would want some time alone, and because I wanted to be cozy at home and work on my scrapbook for Peter. When they get back that night, I ask Ravi what his favorite thing to do in D.C. was, and he says the National Museum of African American History and Culture by far, which makes me regret my decision not to go because I haven't been there yet. We turn on a BBC show on Netflix that Margot has been raving about, and it was filmed near where Ravi grew up, so he points out landmark places, like his first job and his first date. We eat ice cream right out of the cartons, and I can tell that Daddy likes Ravi by the way he keeps urging him to have more. I'm sure he noticed that Ravi is staying in the guest room, and I'm sure he appreciates the gesture. I hope Ravi and Margot keep dating, because I could see him in our family forever. Or at least stay together long enough for Margot and me to take a trip to London and stay at his house. Ravi has to leave for Texas the next afternoon, and while I'm sad to see him go, I'm also a little bit glad, because then we get to have Margot all to ourselves before she leaves again. When we say goodbye, I point at him and say, "Hufflepuff." He grins.
"You got it in one."
Then he points at me.
"Hufflepuff?"
I grin back. "You got it in one." That night, we're in my bedroom watching TV on my laptop when Margot brings up college, which is how I know that on some level she was waiting for Ravi to go too, so she could talk to me about real things. Before we load the next episode, she looks over at me and says,
"Can we talk about UVA? How are you feeling about it now?"
I was sad, but it's all right. I'm still going to go there. Margot gives me a quizzical look, and I explain. I'm going to transfer after freshman year. I talked to Mrs. Duvall, and she said if I got good grades at William and Mary, I would definitely get in as a transfer. Her forehead wrinkles up.
"Why are you talking about transferring from William and Mary when you aren't even there yet?"
When I don't answer right away, she says,
"Is this because of Peter?"
"No. I mean, it is, in part, but not completely." I hesitate before saying the thing I haven't said out loud.
"You know that feeling, like you're meant to be somewhere? When I visited William and Mary, I didn't get that feeling. Not like with UVA. It might be that no school gives you the exact feeling you have with UVA," Margot says.
"Maybe so, which is why I'm going to transfer after a year." She sighs.
"I just don't want you to live a half-life at William and Mary, because the whole time you're wishing you were with Peter at UVA. The freshman year experience is so important. You should at least give it a fair chance, Lara Jean. You might really love it there."
She gives me a look, heavy with meaning.
"Remember what Mommy said about college and boyfriends?"
How could I forget? "Don't be the girl who goes to college with a boyfriend."
"I remember," I say.
Margot takes my laptop and goes on the William and Mary website.
"This campus is so pretty. Look at this weather vane. It all looks like something out of an English village."
I perk up.
"Yeah, it kind of does." "Is it as pretty as UVA's campus?"
"No, not to me. But then I don't think anywhere is as pretty as Charlottesville. And look, William and Mary has a guacamole club. And a storm watchers club. And oh my God, something called a wizards and muggles club. It's the largest Harry Potter club at any U.S. university."
"Wow, that is pretty neat. Do they have a baking club?"
She checks.
"No, but you could start one."
Maybe. That would be fun. Maybe I should join a club or two. She beams at me. See, there's a lot to be excited about. And don't forget the cheese shop.
The cheese shop is a specialty food store right by campus. And they sell cheese, obviously, but also fancy jams and bread and wine and gourmet pastas. They make really great roast beef sandwiches with a house dressing. A mayonnaise-y mustard that I've tried to duplicate at home, but nothing tastes as good as in the shop on their fresh bread. Daddy loves to stop at the cheese shop for new mustards and a sandwich. He'd be happy to have an excuse to go there. And Kitty, she loves the Williamsburg Outlet Mall. They sell kettle corn there, and it's really addictive. They pop it right in front of you, and the popcorn is so hot it melts the bag a little.
Maybe I could get a job in Colonial Williamsburg, I say, trying to get into the spirit. I could churn butter, wear period garb, like a calico dress with an apron, or whatever they wore in colonial times. I've heard they're not allowed to speak to each other in modern-day language, and kids are always trying to trip them up. That could be fun. The only thing is I'm not sure if they hire Asian people because of historical accuracy.
Laura Jean, we live in the time of Hamilton. Philippa Sue is half Chinese, remember? If she can play Eliza Hamilton, you can churn butter. And if they refuse to hire you, we'll put it on social media and make them. Margot tilts her head and looks at me.
See? There's so much to be excited about if you let yourself be.
She puts her hands on my shoulders.
I'm trying, I say. I really am. Just give William and Mary a chance. Don't dismiss it before you even get there, okay?
I nod.
Okay.
Chapter 12. The next morning is gray and rainy out, and it's just us three girls, because Daddy's left a note for us on the refrigerator saying he got called into the hospital, and he'll see us for dinner that night. Margot's still jet-lagged, so she got up early and fixed scrambled eggs and bacon. I'm luxuriously spreading eggs on buttered toast and listening to the rain tap on the roof when I say, "What if I didn't go to school today and we did something fun?" Kitty brightens. "Like what?" "Not you. You still have to go to school. I'm basically done. No one cares if I go anymore."
"I think Daddy probably cares," Margot says.
"But if we could do anything, what would we do?"
"Anything?"
Margot bites into her bacon.
"We'd take the train to New York City and enter the Hamilton lottery, and we'd win."
"You guys can't go without me," Kitty says.
"Be quiet, Aunt Peggy," I say, giggling. She glares at me.
"Don't call me Aunt Peggy."
"You don't even know what we're talking about, so calm down."
"I know you're cackling about it like a witch. Also, I do so know about Hamilton, because you play the soundtrack all day long." She sings, "Talk less, smile more."
"For your information, it's a cast recording, not a soundtrack," I say, and she makes a big show of rolling her eyes.
In truth, if Kitty's anyone, she's Jefferson. Wily, stylish, quick with a comeback. Margot's an Angelica, no question. She's been sailing her own ship since she was a little girl. She's always known who she was and what she wanted. I suppose I'm an Eliza, though I'd much rather be an Angelica. In truth, I'm probably Aunt Peggy. But I don't want to be the Aunt Peggy of my own story. I want to be the Hamilton. It rains all day, so as soon as we get home from school, the first thing Kitty and I do is get back into our pajamas. Margot never got out of hers. She's wearing her glasses. Her hair is in a knot at the top of her head. It's too short to stay put. Kitty is in a big tee, and I'm happy it's cold enough to wear my red flannels. Daddy is the only one still in his day clothes. We order two large pizzas for dinner that night. Plain cheese, for Kitty, and a supreme with the works.
We're on the living room couch shoving oozy slices of pizza into our mouths when Daddy suddenly says,
"Girls, there's something I'd like to talk to you about."
He clears his throat like he does when he's nervous. Kitty and I exchange a curious look, and then he blurts out,
"I'd like to ask Trina to marry me."
I clap my hands to my mouth. "Oh my God!" Kitty's eyes bulge. Her mouth goes slack, and then she flings her pizza aside and lets out a shriek so loud that Jamie Foxx Pickle jumps. She catapults herself at Daddy, who laughs. I jump up and hug his back. I can't stop smiling until I look at Margot, whose face is completely blank. Daddy's looking at her, too, eyes hopeful and nervous.
"Margot, you still there? What do you think, honey?"
"I think it's fantastic."
"You do?"
She nods. "Absolutely. I think Trina's great. And Kitty, you adore her, don't you?" Kitty's too busy squealing and flopping around on the couch with Jamie to answer. Softly, Margot says, "I'm happy for you, Daddy. I really am." The "absolutely" is what gives her away. Daddy's too busy being relieved to notice, but I do. Of course it's weird for her. She's still getting used to seeing Ms. Rothschild in our kitchen. She hasn't gotten to see all the ways Ms. Rothschild and Daddy make sense. To Margot, she's still just our neighbor who used to wear terry cloth booty shorts and a bikini top to mow the lawn.
"I'll need your guys' help with the proposal," Daddy says. "Lara Jean, I'm sure you'll have some ideas for me, right?"
Confidently, I say, "Oh, yeah. People have been doing promposals, so I have lots of inspiration." Margot turns to me and laughs. And it almost sounds real. I'm sure Daddy will want something more dignified than, "Will you marry me?" written in shaving cream on the hood of somebody's car, Lara Jean. "Promposals have gotten way more sophisticated than in your day, Gogo," I say. I'm playing along, teasing her so she can feel normal again after the bomb Daddy just dropped. "My day? I'm only 2 years ahead of you." She tries to sound light, but I can hear the strain in her voice. 2 years is like dog years when it comes to high school. Isn't that right, Kitty?" I pull her toward me and hug her tight to my chest. She squirms away. "Yeah, both of you guys are ancient beings," Kitty says. "Can I be part of the proposal too, Daddy?"
"Of course. I can't get married without you guys."
He looks teary.
"We're a team, aren't we?"
Kitty is hopping up and down like a little kid. "Yeah!" she cheers. She's over the moon, and Margot sees it too. How important this is to her.
"When are you going to propose?" Margot asks.
"Tonight!" Kitty pipes up. I glare at her. "No, that's not enough time to think up the perfect way. We need a week at least. Plus, you don't even have a ring." "Wait a minute, do you?" Daddy takes off his glasses and wipes his eyes.
"Of course not. I wanted to wait and talk to you girls first. I want all three of you to be here for the proposal, so I'll do it when you come back for the summer, Margot."
"That's too far away," Kitty objects. "Yes, don't wait that long, Daddy," Margot says.
"Well, you'll have to help me pick out the ring, at least," Daddy says.
"Lara Jean has a better eye for that kind of thing," Margot says serenely. "Besides, I barely know Miss Rothschild. I haven't a clue what kind of ring she'd like." A shadow crosses over Daddy's face. It's the "I barely know Miss Rothschild" that put it there. I rush to put on my best Hermione voice. "You haven't a clue?" I tease. "P.S., did you know you're still American, Gogo? We don't talk as classy as that in America." She laughs. We all do. Then, because I think she saw that brief shadow too, she says, "Make sure to take tons of pictures so I can see." Gratefully, Daddy says,
"We will. We'll videotape it, whatever it is." "God, I hope she says yes."
"She'll say yes. Of course she'll say yes," we all chorus. Margot and I are wrapping slices of pizza in plastic and then double wrapping in foil. "I told you guys two pizzas would be too much," she says. K-
Kitty will eat it for her after-school snack, I say. So will Peter. I glance toward the living room where Kitty and Daddy are snuggled up on the couch watching TV. Then I whisper, "So how do you really feel about Daddy asking Ms. Rothschild to marry him?"
"I think it's completely bonkers," she whispers back. "She lives across the street, for pity's sake. They can just date like two grown-ups. What's the point of getting married?"
"Maybe they just want it to be official. Or maybe it's for Kitty."
"They haven't even been dating that long. How long has it been? 6 months?"
"A little longer than that. But Gogo, they've known each other for years." She stacks up the slices of foiled pizza and says,
"Can you imagine how weird it'll be to have her living here?"
Her question gives me pause. Ms. Rothschild is at the house a lot, but that's not the same as living here. She has her own way of doing things, and so do we. Like, she wears shoes at her house, but we don't wear them here, so she takes them off when she comes over. And now that I think about it, she's never slept over here before. She always goes back home at the end of the night. So that might feel a little weird. Also, she stores bread in the refrigerator, which I hate. And to be quite honest, her dog, Simone, sheds a lot and has been known to pee on the carpet. But the thing is, since I'm not going to UVA, I won't be around much longer. I'll be away at college.
"Neither of us will be living here full-time, though," I say at last. "Just Kitty, and Kitty's thrilled to death."
Margot doesn't respond right away.
"Yes, they do seem really close."
She goes to the freezer and makes space for the pizza, and with her back facing me, she says,
"Don't forget we have to go prom dress shopping before I leave."
"Ooh, okay." It feels like 2 seconds ago that we were shopping for Margot's prom dress, and now it's my turn. Daddy, who I didn't realize had walked into the kitchen, pipes up with,
"Hey, maybe Trina could go too."
He casts a hopeful look my way. I'm not the one he should be looking at. I already love Ms. Rothschild. It's Margot she has to win over. I look over at Margot, who is giving me wide panic eyes. I say, "I think it should just be a song girls thing this time." Daddy nods like he understands. "Ah, got it." Then he says to Margot, "Can the two of us spend a little daughter-dad time together before you leave? Maybe take our bikes on a trail?"
"Sounds good," she says.
When his back is turned, Margot mouths, "Thank you."
I feel disloyal to Ms. Rothschild, but Margot is my sister. I have to be on her side.
I think maybe Margot's feeling guilty about cutting Ms. Rothschild out of the dress shopping expedition, because she keeps trying to make it more of a thing. When we go to the mall the next day after school, she announces that we'll each pick 2 dresses, and I have to try all of them on no matter what, and then we'll rate them. She even printed out thumbs up and thumbs down emojis and made paddles for us to use. It's cramped in the dressing room, and there are dresses everywhere. Margot gives Kitty the job of rehanging and organizing, but Kitty's already given it up in favor of playing Candy Crush on Margot's phone. Margot hands me one of her picks first. It's a flowy black dress with fluttery cap sleeves.
"You could do your hair up for this one."
Without looking up, Kitty says, "I would go with beachy waves." Margot makes a face at her in the mirror. "Is black really me, though?" I wonder.
"You should try wearing black more often," Margot says. "It really suits you."
Kitty picks at a scab on her leg. "When I go to prom, I'm going to wear a tight leather dress," she says. "It can get hot in Virginia in May," I say as Margot zips me up. "You could wear a leather dress to homecoming, though, since it's in October." We study my reflection in the mirror. The dress is too big in the bodice, and the black makes me look like a witch. But a witch in an ill-fitting dress. "I think you need bigger boobs for that dress," Kitty says. She holds up the thumbs-down paddle. I frown at her in the mirror. She's right, though. "Yeah, I think you're right." "Did Mommy have big boobs?" Kitty asks suddenly.
I think they were on the small side," Margot says.
"Like an A?" What size do you wear? She asks.
AB.
I'm me, Kitty says. And Lara Jean's small like Mommy. Hey, I'm practically a B, I protest.
I'm a large A.